Thanks for joining us on The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. This hour, we're talking about experiences and expectations shape how people see us and how we see ourselves. That's especially true for our guest, who's written a collection of essays about identity and gender and growing up in the Midwest. Listen in and join our conversation now. What do you think about the word tomboy? Do you think it misrepresents people, or do you feel like it's a word that's appropriate to refer to someone as? We're diving deep into this conversation and more, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Our guest is Melissa Falavino. She wrote the book Tomboyland. She grew up here in Wisconsin, and now she's a writer and editor based in New York. Melissa, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
In this book, you write extensively about your deep Wisconsin roots, what it was like growing up in Mount Horeb. What were your childhood experiences like living in this rural town?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I've been gone for a long time now, and you know, the way that I look at my hometown has changed kind of drastically since I was there. You know, I think like a lot of kids growing up in a small town, it felt very small when I was a kid growing up in the 80s and 90s. And now, you know, that I've been gone for a long time and I've been living in New York for over a decade, I think pretty fondly of my hometown. And so it's complicated. It was a great upbringing in a lot of ways, and it was difficult in some ways. And, you know, I think leaving gave me the clarity to look at that a little more closely than I could when I was growing up there.
Yeah, you've lived far away now, but you still can hearken back to potluck dinners and other community events, right? Like, your writing really reflects what I think many of us have experienced growing up in small towns.
Yeah, you know, it really, I lived there for 18 years, you know, it really shaped my whole sense of self and an identity, I guess, you know, even though it kind of complicated that sense of identity, which I also get into in a lot of ways in the book. But certainly, you know, my past was punctuated by all of these sort of very kind of like classic Midwestern tableaus, like the potlucks and the big family gatherings and stuff like that. And I still think about that a lot, especially since my life has changed so dramatically since then.
You mentioned that part of where you grew up includes the Driftless area. When you're thinking about identity, how do you consider Wisconsin's relationship with its landscape?
That's a huge part of where this book came from, really. You know, I started thinking about this landscape that I grew up in but wasn't really aware of until I left. Again, you know, I wasn't able to look at where I came from very clearly until I was far away, and I never really considered how unique the landscape is in South Central Wisconsin and the Driftless area in particular. And in, you know, I was sort of writing about where I came from, and I started to do some research about the Driftless area, and I was like, this is fantastic and so interesting and fascinating. And like, look at this landscape I came from. It's so different and so unique, and I think so unlike what people think of when they think of Midwestern landscapes, you know, prairies and farms. So it really started to serve as kind of a metaphor about my own life, you know, growing up in this place and feeling kind of different, but feeling also very much a part of it in the same way. It's just an extraordinary landscape that's kind of was formed miraculously, if you want to look at it that way, which I do. So it's just become a very important facet of my upbringing. But again, I didn't even notice it when I was there. You know, I don't even remember hearing about the Driftless area when I lived there. It wasn't something I recognized as unique and special until I was gone.
Melissa Falavino is the author of Tomboyland. The book is a personal and universal essay collection about gender and desire and identity and class. And we're taking your questions as we talk with her this hour at 800-642-1234. What do you think it means to be a tomboy? What characteristics do you associate with this term? Have you heard it here in Wisconsin? What do you think it says about who we are and how we judge people? 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Melissa, you have this identity in two worlds, right? You've got the East Coast where you live and also the Midwest where you're from. And you write that when you think of the Midwest, you see it as tomboy land. What do you mean by that?
You know, this is something that I keep turning over, you know, and I don't, like most of the essays that I write, I don't know that I necessarily have an answer to some of these questions. They're just ideas I keep turning over and over and over. And when I wrote that, I think, you know, what I was thinking about was this picture that we have in our mind of the tomboy, you know, the sort of like Midwestern, Laura Ingalls Wilder type, like boyish little girl running around in the fields and, you know, resisting sort of expectations of girlhood, and femininity. So there's that, but then, you know, I also get into this, in the essay Tomboy in the book that, you know, when you know, it's not just about place, but it's also kind of about class, and how sort of class informs your upbringing. And, you know, I come from a family of, you know, many generations of farmers on my mom's side. You know, they've been in Wisconsin for forever, and how that kind of work, when you're connected to the land and reliant upon the land and on, you know, weather systems, becomes really ingrained in your sense of identity and your body and how your body lives in the world and works in the world and the kind of work you do. So even though most of my family are not farmers anymore, you know, they still work the kind of jobs that require strength and, you know, they're on their feet all day. And, so it's sort of this idea that like the work that we do in the places and the families we come from becomes sort of inextricably linked to the way that we live in our bodies. If that makes sense, it's kind of abstract, but that was kind of the organizing principle of that idea of tomboy land.
That your experience is that girls and women have to be strong and able and yet are also expected to be feminine and vulnerable.
Exactly, exactly. And then that creates this sort of tension that, you know, you might not even be aware of when you're a kid. I don't think I was, you know, it wasn't until much later that I sort of started to feel that conflict inside of me and realized kind of the ways that I had these sort of warring experiences and as a girl and as an adolescent and then, you know, sort of as a young adult, definitely, and trying to reconcile those two things.
Melissa Falavino has written a book called Tomboyland. It came out this month, and this hour we're talking about the essays that she's written about growing up in rural Wisconsin and what she's realized since she's lived other places. Your calls are welcome as we talk about gender and identity here in the Midwest. You can call 800-642-1234. Do you think we should stop calling girls tomboys? Do you think the term is sexist, or do you like it? Were you a tomboy? What does that mean to you? 800-642-1234, or you can share your story by emailing ideas at WPR.org. I'm Keely Boltina. This conversation continues here on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Our guest this hour tells her own story, in part by talking with other people. One of the Wisconsin women she introduces in her new book is named Sue. Our guest writes, she's tough in a way that feels specific to Midwestern women. A little closed off, a little hard, a little suspicious of strangers like me, city slickers who ask a lot of questions. We're talking about Sioux and the Midwest and gender here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina. Our guest is Brooklyn author Melissa Falavino. She grew up here in Wisconsin, and there's room for you in this conversation. 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts about these ideals of femininity and masculinity? Do we tend to fall into stereotypes with these terms? What do you credit with that? Should we change it? 800-642-1234. Melissa, your book has different essays. One is The Finger of God. It describes an F5 tornado that touched down near your childhood home when you were a year old. What can you tell us about this moment in your town's history?
You know, the Barneveld tornado is, it's become this sort of, like I call it like an origin story of my own understanding of both where I come from and sort of the idea of storytelling and the stories we tell ourselves growing up and the way that myth works, and maybe especially in a small town. I was a year old when the Barneveld tornado happened, so I have no recollection of it, but I grew up hearing stories about it, and my mom would tell me stories, and, you know, neighbors would tell stories, and it developed this sort of mythic quality in Mount Horeb, which is 8 miles away from Barneveld, you know. And Mount Horeb and Barneveld had a kind of, we were kind of sister towns. I think, you know, in some ways they still are, shared a football team, you know, church congregations, things like that. I had friends from Barneveld. And I think that that tornado became sort of a catalyst for me, both in terms of this obsession that I developed with tornadoes and the weather, and particular severe weather in the Midwest. But also it became sort of a way to, I write in this essay, I grew up kind of in the church and, you know, believing in God, and had this very strong sort of religious upbringing, much of my own making, I think. But as I sort of started to question that and then lose that relationship a little bit, I latched on to the weather and the volatility of the weather. And often, like, I remember thinking about this tornado and thinking something like this could happen at any moment. We have no warning, you know, or very little warning. People can die, you know, and what does that mean if you, when you start to sort of question faith, you know, when you believe in God, you're like, okay, God will protect us. And those are the stories I heard growing up. And so when I started to kind of separate myself from that sort of faith, life of faith, I was like, okay, if there's no God to protect us, what does that mean? And it's a terrifying reckoning when that happens. And so I use that tornado as a way to kind of get into those ideas of faith and losing faith, and the ways that we can develop faith in other arenas. And it just, you know, that tornado has been so, it's like it was always there. The story of it was always there. Because I wasn't there, and because I didn't experience it firsthand, I only had these second and third hand stories. When I decided to include this essay in the book, I was like, okay, I can't write this story unless I talk to the people who actually lived it.
And you traveled back to Wisconsin to interview some of the survivors. What was it like talking to them and hearing about this thing that had become so epic in the community?
It was really interesting. It was really powerful. It was probably my favorite part of writing this book, but it was also one of the hardest parts. I came back last year. It was the 35th anniversary. I interviewed a few people who had been there, and, you know, I didn't really know how I was going to incorporate their stories into my own story. I just knew that I had to talk to them. And so I sat in, you know, their feed mill or in a diner, you know, a nursing home where one of the people lives, and just let them talk and said, you know, what was this like for you? What do you remember of it? What, you know, what stays with you? What doesn't? And some of the folks I talked to, you know, suffered great tragedy and lost members of their family and have this huge you know, lasting grief around it. And as I heard them talk, you know, these things started happening where I started recognizing some of the overlap in the stories that I heard with what they were telling. And then sort of some of the divergences. So like, you know, I had heard one thing, but the people who were actually there were telling me another, you know, that the sirens had not gone off because lightning had struck a power line. And then, you know, somebody else would say, no, we didn't have sirens at all back then. Mm-hmm. So there were all these qualities that sort of came out, you know, in the way that storytelling works. Like, you don't actually know what the truth is and what the reality is, and is there truth and is there a reality when it's all based in memory. And so it was really fascinating and really difficult, but really rewarding. And I was able to work some of those stories into the book, and I think it just gave it a much larger sort of impact, and I hope, anyway.
Yeah. Melissa Falavino is the author of Tomboyland. She writes about growing up in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin. She's a writer, editor, and teacher based in Brooklyn. And we're taking your calls about place, about the Midwest, about gender, and knowing who you are. You can call 800-642-1234, email ideas@wpr.org. Melissa, I have to tell you, my breath literally caught in my throat when I was reading the section on Sue Clerken. Mm. You tell her story so crisply, so simply, as you explain that she was trying to get her toddler to safety when they were hit by debris, and she crouched over his body and then heard his last breath, knowing in that moment that it was her son's last breath. And you write that then she smiled at you. I want to know more about that smile.
Yeah, there was a lot in it. She was, you know, I loved talking to her. She was, you know, talking to her was one of my favorite parts of writing this book. And she, I guess in that moment, you know, in that smile, that moment I wrote about it, what I saw in it was this, you know, this happened a long time ago. This happened 35 years ago. And it was sort of a moment where she has had this sort of lifetime to grieve and to process this moment, and still carries the grief of it in a lot of ways, but in some ways has this, you know, has her own life, you know, has her own life now, and aside from it. And, but I was hearing the story for the first time, and so I feel like what was happening in that moment was this sort of lifetime of having to confront other people's grief when you tell your story, even if you have come to terms with it in some ways. So it was this moment where I felt like she was acknowledging, you know, okay, this person is confronting this terrible story for the first time, and like, I don't know. There's something really important there, I think, in the way that when we tell stories, we give them to other people. You know, we have experiences, and we have traumas, and we have tragedies, and we live them, and we spend years living them and trying to process them and trying to move on from them and trying to recover, such that when someone else learns about this for the first time, It's like having to relive it over again, and also having to make room for the grief of this person who's hearing your story.
And struggling to make sure that it doesn't define you, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because Sue has had this full life. You describe her as friendly and warm and guarded and hardworking, and yet this is the story that she winds up telling.
Yeah, and the one that, you know, I'm sure, you know, for a lot of people outside of her family and her close friends, she is still defined by. And she talked about that too, about having to leave, you know, this town where she lived for so long. And she didn't go far, but she got out, I think in large part because this tragedy, it was like it surrounded her. And I felt that very deeply, you know, growing up in a small town, not far from Barneveld, a very similar town in a lot of ways, like people know everything. They know your traumas, they know your griefs, they know your tragedies. And And it's hard to be defined by that. And so this, there's this need to get out of there and like start again and, you know, build, redefine yourself outside of that, whatever that story is that other people are telling about you.
We're talking with author Melissa Falavino. Her new book, Tomboyland, is a personal essay collection about gender and identity. And we're going to now get into more about what it means to be a tomboy and to give someone that label and whether that's fair and how that defines us. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas at WPR.org. You're part of this conversation. Up next is news. I'm Keely Boltina. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Join us tonight at 8 for live coverage of the Republican National Convention. This is the last night of the gatherings. It's a mix of virtual events and live events as Donald Trump accepts the party's candidacy for president. That's tonight at 8 o'clock on Wisconsin Public Radio and also online at WPR.org. You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about gender and our expectations here in the Midwest. Our guest writes about growing up in Wisconsin. She remembers sturdy, strong women, and yet people assumed a woman capable of hard work should still be feminine, not too powerful or unladylike, whatever that means. We're taking your calls for author Melissa Falavino. Share your story with us at 800-642-1234. We've got Anne from Madison who wants to tell us about growing up. Hi, Anne.
Hi, let me take you off speaker here. I'm at work. So 55 years ago, I was 7 years old, and I was living 4 miles west of Brooklyn on a dairy farm with my three sisters, who were almost the same age I was, and our older brother. And us girls would run around in the fields, in the woods, in the house, everywhere, just in shorts, no shoes, no shirts. And, you know, we picked up rocks out in the field. We did a lot of things outside. And then one day my mom said, you know, you really, really can't go around with no shirts anymore. We had to start wearing shirts. And we were furious. We were so mad. Why should we have to wear shirts when our brother didn't? So that is my statement.
Anne, thank you so much for sharing that with us. And Anne right there has a really great example of some of the things that you're talking about here in Tomboyland, Melissa. This idea that we expect different things of girls and boys, and we just treat them differently.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for sharing that, Anne. It resonates very deeply. I actually have a scene in this book where I had a very similar experience where, you know, I was running around with my friends, most of whom were boys. We were at school and they were all running around with their shirts off. And I was probably in kindergarten, I think. And so I took mine off too. And we were running around together. And one of my teachers was like, okay, Melissa, you have to put your shirt on. And I was like, no, no way. They don't have to put their shirts on. I don't have to put my shirt on. And they sort of tried to corral me to get my shirt on. And, you know, I don't really remember very clearly the details of this story, but I do remember that somehow I got to the roof of the building where I was in school, and I was like on the roof of the building with my shirt off, just sort of, you know, protesting that I had to put my shirt on. I was so mad. And I can still remember that feeling. It's one of my earliest memories, that feeling of like, just anger that I would have to do something differently than my friends did. And I didn't understand it. You know, I had no idea why, because my body didn't look any different from theirs. So I totally feel that.
And what a metaphor that visual could create in so many different directions.
Yes. Yes. I talk about how I don't really remember this scene very, you know, specifically, but I have this version of the memory that I have no idea whether it happened this way. I'd have to talk to my teachers from that time. But like, I have this vague recollection of twirling my shirt around over my head like a lasso and then launching it like in protest and just saying, I will not bow to your instructions. You know, I have no idea if it actually happened that way, but that's kind of what I remember.
Yeah. We've got Andy in Menominee now, who's ready to join our conversation about gender and identity. Hi, Andy.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Certainly, what are you thinking about right now?
So I'm so sorry I haven't read your book. I'm just hearing about it for the first time. I added it to my Amazon cart already.
Right.
I was just thinking, I guess for better or worse, the word tomboy is what we've decided as a society, but I guess that's something I've always been really proud of. I'm from a really, really small town as well, with a lot of farming in my family history. And I think something you kind of touched on is the work ethic of the Midwest. And I am moving back actually now from Washington, but I've always found when I move to different areas, I've had a really easy time getting a job because we do have, that reputation of being good, hard workers. And I just like that. I love that. And whether tomboy is the correct word for it, I guess I'm still proud of it.
Andy, thanks for that. And Melissa, Andy's preaching to the choir here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Andy. I think that I, wear the word pretty proudly too. And I write about it in the book about this sort of, it's got kind of a problematic past and origins that are rooted in racism, which I didn't know until I started researching the word. And I also write about how it was used sort of derogatorily, but I think at a certain point I claimed it, or reclaimed it, however you want to look at it. And you've seen, we've seen sort of this reclamation in recent years too of clothing brands and, other, celebrities and such claiming the word tomboy as sort of this banner of pride. I absolutely think that it's something that I feel proud of, and I don't think of it in terms of those, of like the sort of problematics of it anymore. I think of it in terms of like, okay, this is a word like any word that was given to us or that we created as a people, to make meaning. And, so it can mean kind of whatever you want it to mean, so go for it.
Melissa Falavino is a Wisconsin native who has written a personal essay collection called Tomboyland. And we're talking about tomboys and gender identity, and especially as we apply that here in the Midwest. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What do you think it means to be a tomboy, or what characteristics do we associate with women and men here in this part of the country? And is that a good thing, or does that define people without them being able to really express their identity? 800-642-1234, or if you don't want to call, you can email ideas@wpr.org. Melissa, you write about being proud of being a tomboy. You talk about fighting and swearing and climbing trees and building forts and playing sports and banging up your knees. And you also, you talk about a particular haircut that you insisted your mother get you. And I just want to make sure that we talk about what this looked like.
Yes, this is a very important part of the book for sure. Mom, if you're listening, I'm sorry. Yes, there was a time, a hallowed time in the 90s, early 90s, when all the boys were getting spiky, spiky haircuts and like gelling up their spikes. And I had really long hair, and I wanted a spiky haircut, just like all my friends did. All the boys had the spiky haircut, and I was like campaigning. I want to say I was about 8 at the time, maybe 9, campaigning for the spiky haircut. And my mom was like, I think she had some reticence, but eventually she acquiesced and said, and now, again, this is my recollection of the story, so she might have a different version, but in my memory, she said, okay, we can do spikes on top as long as you keep it long in the back. And thus was my first of quite a few mullets in my life. And this one was tremendous. It was like we did at-home haircuts, and so she cut around my ears, you know, and cut it short on top. And then I gelled the top into these like long spikes, and then the rest of my hair cascaded down my back, and it like hit the middle of my back. So it was epic. It was an epic mullet.
And again, there, with the visuals.
Photographic, yes. Photographic evidence to prove this too.
And yet this is such an interesting example, because so often we take people's appearances and assume things about their gender. And even in your book, you describe yourself as not fitting into traditional gender roles. I mean, where do you see yourself on the gender spectrum?
It's a great question. You know, I think that in my own experience, that has changed a lot, and I suspect will continue to change. You know, there are days when I sort of claim the word woman and claim it and, like, you know, hold it kind of fiercely, like I am a woman and I feel proud of that. And then there are days when I don't feel connected to that word. And so a lot of this, that the near title essay in the book, Tomboy, talks about that, like, you know, this sort of feeling a little in between language that we're given, you know, and thinking about terms like non-binary and genderqueer, which also feel kind of right for me in certain ways, but that I don't really cling to, you know, like I cling to woman. And so much of that, I think, is learned, you know. We grow up, you know, having, you know, these words, girl and woman, and the pronouns she, her, attached to us, and we get attached to them sometimes, you know. And so, you know, a part of my experience has been learning to be okay with the fact that sometimes I feel these things and sometimes I don't, and that that's okay, that we don't need to necessarily give ourselves a label, and it certainly doesn't need to be static, you know, that sometimes our feeling, our sense of self, our sense of identity can change, and there's a fluidity to the way that we live in our body and life in general. And so much of my own experience has been kind of learning to be okay with that. And then also kind of, you know, being proud of that, you know?
Melissa Falavino is the author of Tomboyland. She's a writer and editor in Brooklyn. And we are talking about what it means to be a tomboy and these issues of gender and identity, especially in the Midwest. Stay with us here on The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Boltina. Our guest lives in New York, but she's written a book rooted in her Wisconsin upbringing. Melissa Falavino is a writer, editor, and teacher out east, and we're talking about how she's learned to define herself and all of her experiences in Mount Horeb and beyond were part of that journey. And we're taking your calls now, and we've got Rana from Rice Lake who wants to talk about the word that's the basis of the book, Tomboyland. Hi, Rana.
Hi, good morning. I'm excited to hear about your program. I've always considered myself a tomboy and been proud of it. I'm almost 60 now. But I was thinking about the origin of the word tomboy. If the author is aware of, you know, where it came from and what generation and what are its roots set in. When I think of the word tomboy, when I hear Tom, I don't know if it's just the times we're in, but I immediately think of something like Uncle Tom's Cabin. And I don't know if there's a connection there or what that might be, but I just wanted to say I've been proud to be a tomboy my entire life. I grew up in the Driftless area in Eastman, Wisconsin, and I remember that tornado that the author is talking about. And it's certainly one of the most beautiful parts of our state. And I think, personally, there's a lot of great tomboys that grew up in that area. So I'll take your answer off the air, and thank you.
Rana, thanks for the question. Melissa, a brief understanding of when we started calling girls tomboys.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating and complex history. And thank you, Rana, for the question. You know, I think the earliest origins are sort of rooted in this kind of derisive use of the word to it described a rude and boisterous woman, and sort of synonymous with harlots and badly behaving women. And then it sort of shifted, and there's this antebellum implication that basically, and I didn't know this until I started researching the book, but basically, you know, there was this movement among sort of like the Victorian sort of white families that they wanted post slavery, they wanted to maintain the white majority, and they were afraid that whites would no longer be the majority. So they started to try to encourage their daughters and young girls and women to, run outside and play rather than this kind of Victorian model of like girls staying inside and being very fair and being, very fragile. They started encouraging their daughters to run around and play and do things more like the boys so that they would be strong and that they would be capable and thus would be able to procreate and have healthy babies. And this kind of carried over into the antebellum U.S. too. So there was this sort of push to, ensure that white girls were, able to continue on their line. And so this sort of ideology of the tomboy is sort of twisted up in that sort of push. Hmm. And I'm not exactly sure, and it's hard to kind of trace when the word sort of moved out of that understanding or if it ever fully did. But certainly it's a complex past. And there's a book called Tomboys, A Literary and Cultural History by Michelle Ann Abate that she gets really deeply into that, talks about all of the sort of great literary tomboys, but then also gets into the complexities of this, these racial implications as well.
Melissa Falavino is the author of Tomboyland. The book is a collection of personal essays about her childhood life in Wisconsin and what she knows now that she doesn't live here anymore. And we've got Trisha from Platteville who wants to talk to us about being a tomboy of sorts. Hi, Trisha.
Hello.
What are you thinking about? How does this resonate in your life?
So I had a couple things. My little sister was like tomboy, shaved her head. Oh God, we moved down to Rockford, Illinois, and she had just shaved her head right before we went down there, and my mom let her do it. My mom was a tomboy, so my mom was all on board with it. So we get down there, and like our first days of school, everybody was like, oh, that little boy over there is cute. Mm. I'm looking like, what little boy are you talking about? And they, oh, well, that one. And I'm like, that's my sister. Oh, no. And yeah, so I was defending her all the time in those schools down there. Also I had a question. How is gender fluidity, how do you ever say the word, sorry, gender fluid any different than being a tomboy right now? Like, in my opinion, it's kind of the same thing, just people are more acceptable to the gender fluid and letting them, like, the girls are renaming themselves, and it's more girls than I see boys that are being gender fluid.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that perspective, Trisha, and also for the story. And, mm-hmm. Trisha, trying to put the pieces together here about our experiences as tomboys and what gender fluidity is and how we try to figure out who we are. Melissa.
That's a great question. I don't really, know that I have a specific answer. I think it's probably different for everybody. And, I don't specifically identify as gender fluid, you know, although I know a lot of people do. I just like, you know, I think about that word fluidity a lot and what that can mean. And I think it means different things for different people. And certainly there are people who identify as tomboys that also identify as gender fluid and vice versa. But I think that, you know, it's a way to kind of resist previous labels of gender identity. I mean, that's how I see it, that there are all these words like tomboy and other words that have been given to us in the past that, you know, maybe don't quite seem to fit, or they've got all these complex historical meanings. And so people are creating new words and new identities or words for those identities to better encapsulate how they feel in their bodies, you know, and that's exciting to me, you know, the way that language changes and the way that we're always kind of finding new words to describe ourselves and our bodies. And to me, gender fluidity just means giving yourself the space to, you know, to understand that we can change in the way that we think about ourselves and identify. And that's kind of liberating.
You've written this collection of essays. You've had a chance to figure out who you are so far and how those past experiences help define you. If you could give younger Melissa advice right now, what would you tell her?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, I think that I would tell her to, you know, not worry so much about what people expect of her, and to, you know, follow what feels right and true, and to just kind of go with what, you know, I don't know, sounds kind of cliche, but to follow her heart, and also that there are people out there that she will meet and that will become community, that she might not have met yet, but that are out there and that will understand these questions as well.
Hold out hope. It's there.
Exactly.
Melissa, this has been a joy. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us about your new book.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been wonderful.
Melissa Falavino is the author of Tomboyland. The book is a collection of essays, both about her life growing up in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin, and what she's learned when figuring out who she is and how we define other people. I'm Keely Boltina. You are listening to The Morning Show. Thanks for being with us here on the Ideas Network. Have a good day.